Tamara Nadel.
Yep.
Okay, maybe we can start by, okay, how did you first become involved in Ragmala?
Okay. I became involved in Ragmala completely by accident. I came to the Twin Cities to go to McAllister, and I was dancing as a hobby. I never thought it would be anything that I would do professionally. I was planning to go to law school, and but I had always danced, and I auditioned for the dance ensemble, and I was taking some classes in the dance department, and one of them was a class called Dance Appreciation that was required of dance minors, taught by Becky Heist, the chair of the department, and one of the assignments was the entire class was going to see a dance performance, and they were supposed to go and write a review. And I couldn't go. I had rehearsal for something, and Becky said, don't worry about it, just go see something and write me a review. And I had a good friend at the time who was Indian, and her parents were coming to town, and she was taking them out to dinner to an Indian restaurant and to see this Indian dance performance, and they invited me to go along, and I was like, sure, I have to go see something. It turned out to be the first show that Ronnie and Aparna did as Ragamala in 1992, Ragamala Painting in Motion. And I was just blown away by it, just so impressed by the combination of intense physicality and deep spirituality and profound emotional content that I had never seen before. But I loved it. I wrote this review of it that I still have that's absolutely glowing, and thought that would be the end of it. Then my junior year, I studied abroad, came back, and found out that the dance department was bringing Ronnie in to set a piece on a group, to do a semester-long workshop and set a piece for the annual dance concert. The interesting thing is that I wasn't supposed to be there that semester. I was planning to stay and travel in Israel and Europe for the second semester, and decided not to. Kind of almost at the last minute decided to come back. Be at McAllister for that semester. It happened to be the semester Ronnie was there. I took her class, and then after that, she asked me to keep studying with her. That summer, she asked me to be in a piece, and it was when she was just forming the company, so she was looking around. She was teaching at the U at the time, teaching at McAllister, just looking for dancers to bring into her company, people trained in other forms that she could mold and teach and educate. She also had some of her own students that she was working with. So yeah, she asked me to be in a show that summer, and I've been with her ever since.
Oh, wow. So that was how many years ago?
That was, and nobody in the future is allowed to do the math on this one, that was in 1994.
Okay. So 94. So you've been, and you had prior, so you had dance experience before this.
Yes, I grew up doing ballet and gymnastics.
Okay.
And was doing some modern dance at McAllister. I was taking an African dance class, too.
So, how did it going to a South Indian dance form? How was it going from a traditional Western dance form to a very traditional South Indian dance form?
At that point, what I was wanting to do was try out everything. So like I said, I was taking African dance, I took a couple of semesters of Scottish Highland dance, I took Ronnie's workshop, I was doing all these different things. Kind of, like I said, I never thought I would be a dancer. I hadn't actually studied ballet in a long time. I'd done ballet when I was a kid and then moved into gymnastics and had been doing that. And again, never thought I would be at all competitive at any level, but just did it for fun. So got back into dance as something just for fun. And so in that sense, I was just like trying out all these different things, trying to see how much I could learn and how much I could experience. And when I met Ronnie, it was again that it, what appealed to me about it was the rigor of the classical form. But then, and this is something that I didn't really realize at the time, I had seen them perform. So I knew that there was this incredible capacity for emotion in the form. But when you're first learning, of course, you don't touch that. That doesn't come until many years later. So what appealed to me at first about doing it was the physicality of it. It was hard, and it was precise, and it was rhythmic, and it was mathematically rhythmic in a way that was exciting. I've always been a math brain. And so that's what appealed to me at first. But then as as I have been working, I mean, it'll be 20 years in February that I've known Ronnie, and as I've been working with her, the thing that keeps me interested is that every project is something new. Every inspiration, every idea, every approach to every show is completely different than the one that came before. And the work has evolved so much in the way Ronnie and now Aparna, you know, for the last many, many years, it's been the two of them together, really as a unit. They almost share a brain in the way that they work together. They counterpoint each other, but also support each other. And they like to say once an idea comes out, they don't know who had the thought and who finished it. So it's really, when I talk about it now, I'm talking about both of them, that the way they're constantly evolving and the way they approach their form and the way they approach their vision with their form as a medium, it's constantly evolving, and that's what keeps me interested.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you can explain a little bit how it's evolving, how Sure. you've seen it in the early stages through today.
Sure. I'm also the grant writer for Ragamala. So I'm lucky enough to be privy to a lot of the discussions that they have about their vision and their approach. So from the beginning, Ronnie was just starting to find her place in this community. She had actually had a place in the community since the early 80s. She is, as I'm sure you know from talking to her, totally fearless. So she had come to this country, she hadn't danced in years, she had stopped dancing when she got married, and the community at the time was small and had asked her to start. They found out that she had danced and they asked her to teach because there was nobody here to teach the kids. And so she started going back to India to study, and that's when she got back into it. And I'm sure this is all in her history, how she met Lully and all of that. But what she is completely fearless. So she would pick up the phone and call the Minnesota Dance Alliance and say, how do I write a grant proposal? How do I write a resume? How do I write a press release? She heard Robert Bly's translations of Mirabai and called him up and said, let's work together. You know, it's like iconic figure. She just picks up the phone and calls him because that's the kind of drive she has. And now why did I start talking about that? What was the question?
The evolution.
The evolution. So when she first started working here, it was about taking this form that she loved and almost translating it for American audiences. And so she, and also at the time, there wasn't a big Indian community here. She didn't have an in to the national network of South Indian classical musicians. So she was working with what she had. She would find, so it was partly necessity that like she couldn't necessarily do work with classical music because she didn't have the musicians here to work with, but also she was in this country, in this kind of multifaceted culture for the first time, and looking around and thinking, I can take inspiration from that, I can take inspiration from that. And she would hear a piece of music or hear a piece of poetry or see another dancer and see the connections, both thematically and physically and musically, and approach them and do this collaborative work. So in the early years, I feel like her work was much more kind of out there. Like, what can I do with my form? Let's see how far I can push the limits of the form while still strictly maintaining its aesthetic and cultural and spiritual integrity. So it was never, she was never reacting against the form. That's a totally different thing. There are people that do that, and that's a totally different form. You know, she was making a contemporary statement within a classical form. And so there was never any rejection, there was never any reactionary philosophy. It was all about seeing the depth and breadth of this form and what it could do. Could it share a stage and have an artistic conversation with West African dance, with Japanese taiko drumming, with Western classical opera? And then as she started evolving, and also as Aparna's voice started coming in, because Aparna's instinct is a lot more classical. They're kind of a classic first generation, second generation, you know, Ronnie is reaching out while Aparna is reaching back, and that's a very reductive way to look at it, and I don't want to like get stuck there, but the idea is Aparna is much more of a classicist. So, but she also has a vision of a vision beyond just the physical or the musical collaboration, but she really needs to have a root in a theme or in a philosophy in order to make a collaboration work. So the two of them together, as they evolved and as their voices kind of counterpointed and merged at the same time, the work has become a lot more kind of philosophically and spiritually rooted. It has become much larger in scale as they grow. Their vision of what they can accomplish scale-wise is growing. And everything, everything they do now is an evening length work, because that's just the way their vision is evolving. They want to create these fully integrated experiences. Shauna Sippy, who's a religion professor at Carleton, who's been an advisor to us on many projects, she said, Ragamala creates not works, but worlds. And that's something that they really, when they heard it, they were like, yes, that's exactly what we're trying to do. Because they want to give the audience a full experience that's, of course, like aesthetic and intellectual, but also visceral and emotional and truthful. So as their aesthetic is evolving and growing, the thing that we've been talking about the most when we're talking about their work now is that emotional truth. So that it's not, I won't say what it's not, I'll say what it is. It's that everything that we do is a true expression of emotion. And that's something that we want to do as artists, and that we hear from our audiences that they value about what we do.
So you've seen that as a continual development and a growth. And I'll just throw this in here that Ronnie did mention that Aparna was concerned. She was like the root. She was going to the root. And that was always a concern of hers.
Yeah.
You know, just as you stated.
So, we've been using the image of a tree lately. The roots reaching down and the branches reaching up. But the roots are vital. Without the roots, the tree will fall over.
Exactly.
So, and that's not to say that Ronnie lost her roots when she was experimenting.
Well, no, she has great, great respect. And yeah. That's where she's coming from.
Right. But it's that mindfulness of the roots and the branches, that oppositional force is what creates the strength of the work.
Mm. Yeah, you need them both. Mm. Yeah. Then, as you know, these things, you know, the company has evolved in this way. How have you evolved in this process?
That's interesting. Well, we always talk about Bharatanatyam, or really any classical art form, as an ocean. The depth and the breadth of it is just practically infinite, and you can keep learning and keep immersing yourself, and there's always farther to go. And that's what makes it exciting. But that's also what makes for a lifelong journey. So with every project, you learn something new. With every class with Ronnie and Aparna, you learn something new. Every rehearsal, every conversation. You know, as someone, the way our company works is that we're all both, nearly all of us have both artistic and administrative roles. So I dance for the company, I teach for the school, I do community outreach as an artist, but I'm also the grant writer and I administer the community outreach. And also do many, many other things because it's a small nonprofit and that's how it goes. But to be able to approach it from all those different perspectives and also to be immersed in it all day. So I don't have to go and wait tables for 8 hours a day or do my other job. But everything that I do professionally is toward the same goal of advancing this company and advancing the work. every minute is a learning experience. Writing a grant, talking to Ronnie about the next project, talking with Aparna about reframing the way we talk about our aesthetic, you know, all of these things. Each thing gives you just a little bit more knowledge and a little bit more depth. So, and from the beginning, Ronnie really welcomed all of us into her world, not just her company, but her family, her culture, her tradition. She took us to India. You know, I went to India with Ronnie when I'd only known her for like less than 2 years. And it was amazing to be completely immersed in the December season in Chennai and see performances and go to the temple and see the women making flower garlands and watching people, how they move, how they walk, how they carry themselves in the temple, how they carry themselves in life. All of this factors, feeds back into the performance because it's all, you know, for someone who doesn't come from an Indian background, it's not just about learning the dance form, it's about learning music, poetry, philosophy, culture, traditions, but also about embodying another culture. Because Bharatanatyam is very much a physicalization of a particular culture. And so learning about that, you can't just learn in the studio. There has to be more than that. So there has to be reading and studying and all of that, but there also has to be the experiential bit of being in India and seeing how people are and seeing how things go, watching the procession of the chariot, you know, all of these things that you're trying to embody in dance, actually seeing what they are and how they work and experiencing them firsthand. So there's so many different perspectives from which you see. I've lost track of the question again because I just kept talking.
How have you evolved?
Right. So.
And which you are addressing.
Yes. From the beginning, Ronnie really brought us into that and allowed us to grow into that and allowed us to be a part of it in a way that I think is pretty spectacular. And this is a form that was traditionally passed on only within a particular caste, and that hasn't been true for a long time for many sociological and historical reasons. But it really is, you know, we still encounter people who look at us and think, oh, what are those American girls going to do? And then they see us dance, and what we do opens their minds. So, but there's still somewhat of a reflexive, like, this is something for Indians to do. And, which is always interesting because, of course, India is a 20th century phenomenon, you know. Does it make any more or less sense for a Cuban and Jewish girl from New York to do Bharatanatyam than for a, you know, Muslim girl from North India? I don't know. India itself embodies so much diversity. So, but for Ronnie to really just welcome us into her tradition that way, and the way she sees it, and you see this in everything that she does, Ronnie and Aparna both, that if someone is willing to come to them and respect their tradition and be interested in their tradition and want to learn about it, they're so happy to teach. And they're not, you know, they're not selfish with their traditions or with their experience at all. They're both such generous teachers and such generous artists, directors, choreographers, dance makers, you know, whatever the word is for the person who brings all of these people together and has this vision and pushes it forward. So in that sense, I feel like I, bringing it back to me because that was the question, that I'm just constantly learning and constantly getting closer to what we are trying to do with the work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds very organic and holistic way of learning.
Absolutely.
And embracing, as you said, something, a culture that's not really, you weren't brought up with.
Right. And on the company side, actually, this is the other side of the question, is because it's not just about the work, but it's about the growth of the company, that when I first started, we would do a performing season in town. We would maybe do a We did a lot of school residency in those days, and that has to do with funding for education disappearing. Mm-hmm. School residencies aren't happening as much as they are. We still really value community outreach, and we value creative community outreach, so we're always looking for new ways to get our work out into the community, engage new audiences. But at the beginning, it was small-scale performances, local community outreach, you know, we statewide community outreach as well. There was some statewide touring. In the late 90s, we signed with our first agent, and we started touring somewhat. But the evolution from, you know, doing 2 weeks a year at the Southern and doing residencies in Twin Cities and Greater Minnesota to performing at the American Dance Festival and having a work commissioned by Lincoln Center and commissioned by the Walker, you know, that trajectory has also been a really exciting thing to be a part of. You know, work that's recognized increasingly by national funders, national presenters. We just signed with a new agent who has much more international focus. We've had some international touring, but we're really looking to expand that as one of our next hurdles. So that's been really exciting. As the company has grown, as the vision has grown, as we have all grown as artists, to see the presence of the company grow. And you're still to be very much rooted here in this community, because this is our home. Twin Cities is our home. Minneapolis, Minnesota is our home. And we're still, you know, we're not going to give up our roots here, but we're so honored to be able to take work that was born and bred and nurtured here to places like Lincoln Center, places like American Dance Festival, that'll make people think, oh, Minneapolis, do they have a dance scene there? Maybe that's something I should check out. You know, whereas, of course, we know how mm-hmm. strong the dance scene is here. But that's not something that people necessarily recognize in New York. So we're happy to be part of kind of raising that consciousness on a national and international level that this community does exist here.
I'm curious, at what point, you started out as a dancer, and when did you become part of the staff? And, you know, maybe you can talk a little bit about how it's mostly the dancers who are the staff as well.
Yeah, it was by accident, again. When I first started working with Ronnie, the company existed as a 501c3 nonprofit, but there was no staff. And before Ronnie even put herself on salary, we brought in a managing director and kind of tried out that model of having a managing director, having dancers. And we were, at a certain point, put on salary as dancers. And then we went through some financial troubles. And it was kind of by necessity. We found ourselves with some debt and with, you know, dancers that were on salary that were hoping to continue to build the company, but we had this debt, we had a board saying, we don't know how to sustain this financially unless we fire the dancers, and we're sitting there saying, but if you fire us, the company disappears. And so we just, out of necessity, kind of trial by fire, took on all of these roles. And Aparna had done some work in marketing, so she took over the marketing. I thought, I really didn't have any grant writing experience, except that I had written a couple of successful personal grants. So Ronnie had some experience grant writing from before she had had any staff. She was the grant writer at the time, so that kind of fell into my lap. I was like, I can write, I'll try grant writing. And so we just kind of jumped into those roles and ended up growing into them and growing with them. And when the time came that we were in a financial position to bring in new staff, we had found so much value in that model that we had that we didn't give it up. So we did bring in new staff. We got a grant from the Bush Foundation at one point to hire an administrative assistant, who was our first, you know, non-artist administrative staff member. And that position has now, it's gone through a couple of different people and has grown into more of an office manager position. We had a business manager. That was something. We got a grant from McKnight when we were having these financial troubles to bring in a temporary person. Then we got a grant from MRAC to bring in a permanent business manager so that we would, because that was one thing we knew we didn't have, was that financial expertise. Now we do, because now we know that you have to pay attention to those things. There can't just be one person who understands that side of it, because then you could get in trouble. So now we all know how to read a balance sheet and how to, you know, put together a budget. But in those days, we brought somebody in, and she's amazing, and she's still with us, our business manager, Jan Gonder. So then we eventually, Ronnie's other daughter, Ashwini, who had, after graduating from college, gone to New York to work in marketing, in publishing, on the marketing side of publishing for a while, came back because she missed being a part of the company. And she moved into a marketing role as well because she had this marketing experience. And it was at a time when Ronnie and Aparna were trying as much as possible to pull back from the administrative side. They're still the artistic directors, so they oversee everything administratively, but the kind of nuts and bolts. And of course, they're going to be a part of it. But as much as possible, we were trying to make time for them to create art. And so Ashwini came in as that marketing person. I stayed as the development person. So we eventually were able to bring in Louise Robinson as our managing director, which was amazing. She was one of Ronnie's first advocates in this dance community back when she was at the Dance Alliance in the early 80s. And then she had taken some time out of the professional world to raise her kids. And then it happened to be that we were at a place financially to bring her in at the same time that her kids were in high school. So she came on as managing director. We have, right now as an office manager, interestingly, she's not a dancer with our company, but she is a dancer. She dances with Matthew Janczewski. And so it's kind of an added bonus. Like, part of having that administrative, like, office manager person not be a dancer with our company is that we want to have somebody in the office when we're on tour. That was just very much a logistical thing, because until then, and still very much, you know, when we're having big touring seasons, we do all of our work from laptops and iPhones and iPads. And if that stuff didn't exist, you know, 2,000-year-old classical form would not exist without modern technology, because our company couldn't function without all of that connectivity. But Louise, I have trouble getting Louise and Elise's names straight, so you'll have to forgive me. But Elise, our office manager, she's able to be here, but she's also an artist, so she understands the work, she loves the work. We're also able to support her career because we give her flexible hours so she can go to rehearsal, so that works out really well. She's an artist, even though she's not one of our artists. But it ends up being this, like, it was all by accident, but it's this situation where people who are writing the grants, people who are writing the press releases, people who are writing the fundraising letters, the people who are making the copies and running to the post office are all people who are so invested in the mission and also who are there for the creation of the work. So we know about it on a very intimate level. And that's something about Ronnie and Aparna's creative process, is that they very much involve the dancers in it. So they have their conversations and their creative epiphanies and their, you know, working through different ideas. They do it with us in the room and using us as part of their experimentation. So we're there for all of this evolution of their thinking. And whenever we can, we like to be there just as flies on the wall when they're talking about the work, just because it's so exciting for us to get that perspective on it. But it also makes us better at our administrative jobs of marketing and fundraising and all of those things, because we can speak passionately and deeply about the work. So, and it was funny, I was talking to the executive director of Dance USA last week in a meeting, and I introduced myself because we'd never met, and I introduced myself as development and outreach director and dancer, and she said, "Oh yeah, you guys have that model, don't you? And you know, you do it in a way that's very," what was the word she used? Not integrated, but basically she said, there are a lot of people who do it, but you guys are the ones who do it right. That it's not just gratuitous that we hire our dancers into these administrative positions because we want to employ them 52 weeks a year, which is also really amazing. And an added bonus of this is that most dancers are laid off for 20 weeks a year. and we don't have to be, but we're known for doing it in a way that works on both sides.
Right. Well, they both feed each other, mm-hmm. both the roles.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Maybe you can talk a little bit, you said you also teach, mm-hmm. and maybe you can talk about the dance school and that aspect of Ragmala.
Sure. We think it's so important to pass on what we have to the next generation. So it's the Irani and Aparna are senior disciples and proteges of Alarme Valli, who is one of India's greatest living masters. And that kind of repository of knowledge and tradition is something that they passed on to us and that they want to continue to pass on to the next generations. So it's that artistic excellence, but also our work ethic and our broad vision of the classical form as being capable of speaking to the contemporary experience. So all of those things are what we attempt to put forward to our students. And we really value what we can offer because we're primarily a performing company and a touring company. And so the primary focus of what we do is creating new work. So we don't necessarily have the resources to have a huge school. So what Ronnie and Aparna decided to do at one point a while ago was keep our school small. Our intro classes are open to anybody, but the classes are extremely rigorous and we expect dedication and practice and really hard work from our students. And so the senior level classes are quite small because they, you know, if kids want to, or if parents want their kids to take Bharatanatyam classes as a link to their culture, as something fun to do on a Saturday, as, you know, a chance to put on a costume and get on stage, or really most importantly as a way to stay connected to Indian culture in Minnesota, there are many opportunities to do that. There are a lot of community level teachers, particularly now. We're always meeting new teachers who are moving to town and who are starting up either small performing groups or classes. And so that is out there. We don't have to fill that niche. But the niche that we want to fill is, Ronnie always says, to be the Harvard of Bharatanatyam. So to really be strict about the integrity of the form. So yeah, our intro classes have about 20 kids and our senior classes have like 4. And we have found some amazing kids who are really excited and really dedicate themselves. And, you know, they're 15, 16, 17-year-old kids who really, you know, they come in, and you don't know this about them when they come in and they're only 7 or 8 years old. And they're 7 or 8 years old. They're kind of casual, kind of maybe a little bit lazy, and, you know, interested, but, you know, whatever. But at a certain point, you see when it clicks in their mind and they think, wow, this is really amazing. What do I need to do to be able to experience this? And then to see the ones that do that is incredibly rewarding.
Yeah, I think a key word here is discipline.
Mm-hmm.
It's a discipline,
yeah.
An artistic discipline.
Yeah.
And I think
absolutely.
A lot of people don't realize
yeah.
what it takes.
Yep.
You know.
Yep. Yeah, you end up spending a lot of time talking to these kids who are like straight A students and they're like 3 grades ahead in math and they work so hard on their homework. And there's a point at which they realize that they also have to work hard at dance, but it's not innate. They know they need to work hard at their homework at school.
Yeah, they somehow think because it's dance they can get
by. Yeah, dance
by.
Is fun. Yeah. Yes, it is, but it's also hard. It's only fun if it's hard work.
Okay, maybe you can talk, a bit about how you've seen the audiences grow and change throughout the years. As the work has grown and changed, how have you seen the audiences grow and change?
That's interesting. You know, by the time I came in, Ronnie had already done a lot of the groundwork of reaching out beyond the Indian community, because of course the Indian community was her first audience base and her first support base. But she really reached out to the Dance Alliance, to the Southern Theater, to the press, to, you know, there were, in the late 70s, early 80s, there were a handful of women who really created a place for non-Western mainstream dance in the Twin Cities. And it was Ronnie, it was Susanna De Palma, it was Cassandra, Hussara Whitaker, really just kind of put their work out there and demanded that it be seen. Not demanded, but by putting good work out there, in a sense, made people look. And didn't just put it out there, but wrote grants to MRAC, wrote press releases to the Star Tribune, developed relationships with people in the, I don't want to say mainstream dance community, because that, again, is also very reductive, but the in those days, that's what the dance community was, and it didn't have the diversity that it has now. And that was really remarkable. So by the time I met Ronnie in the mid-90s, a lot of that had been done. So the audience was already extremely diverse, coming from kind of all walks of life and all sorts of interests. There was the Indian community. There were the people who were already interested in Indian arts and culture. There were the dance audiences that were coming because they were curious about what was being presented at a place like the Southern or in those days Studio 6A. What I am noticing more and more is the recognition, like the name recognition of Ragamala is growing and growing. As the audiences grow, as more people come to see us, more people hear about us, we make more and more connections in the community. And that's another thing about collaborating with local arts organizations, whether they're performing groups or presenters, it's that mingling of audiences that happens. So, or if we do a collaboration with a taiko drumming group from Japan, as we just did, we reach out to the Japanese language program at the University of Minnesota and invite them to come to a meet and greet with the artists, and then some of them end up coming to the show. And that's, you know, just one simple example of building partnerships to build new audiences. When we had an indigenous folk artist from India whose work is rooted in his community's philosophy of interconnectedness between humanity and nature, we did, we co-sponsored an artist talk with the Alliance for Sustainability and The Wedge. And he also did a demonstration at the Mill City Farmers Market. So it's drawing those connections. And that's something that Ragamala has really become known for, is kind of moving beyond, now that the money isn't necessarily there in schools anymore, moving beyond the school residency model into a more community residency model. And finding those unique connections that can happen when you have a particular artist or group here. So in that sense, we've been consistently building the audience in that way, but it's following the same path that Ronnie had already charted when I met her. But yeah, the recognition more and more, when somebody says, oh, who do you dance for? And you say Ragamala, 20 years ago it was, what's that? And these days, increasingly, it's, oh, Ragamala, you guys perform at the Coles, right? Weren't you just there? So people are more and more, we're becoming more and more of an institution. You know, as Ronnie gets the McKnight Distinguished Artist Award, Ronnie and Aparna are the Star Tribune Artists of the Year. You know, there's more and more sense that we are an institution in the community, and that is something that I've really seen grow.
Good. Well, and you've sort of addressed a few of these, like just right now, the community relationships, mm-hmm. and how that has grown. And how have you seen, the popularity of the dance form, how has that changed in your time with them?
Oh. Well, in the last 5 or 6 or 8 years, since Bollywood has become a thing, That is, it's very much a double-edged sword. Because, you know, somebody says to you, oh, I've seen what you do. I've seen Bollywood movies. You have to say, you know, my thing is Bollywood is to Bharatanatyam as MTV is to the New York City Ballet. You know, it's because they do gestures. So, but the other edge of the sword is that it develops a curiosity. You know, people see a Bollywood movie and they become interested in India. And so when they get the flyer from the Coles that we're going to be there, they come to the show. And once they see it, they realize it's different. And maybe they develop an interest in that too. So Indian music, Indian movies, Indian food. I mean, Indian food has been popular for a long time, but it's becoming more and more kind of mainstream. As more and more people are getting into it, it becomes more and more part of pop culture. And so, and that of course has its problems, but it also has its, it creates a curiosity in people. The other thing we've been noticing, and this is a little bit back to your previous question, is that less and less we're considered like the ethnic thing on somebody's season, like when we're touring. And that was a lot of the reason we left our old agent and moved on to our new agent, is because we didn't want to be pigeonholed in that way anymore. And I think it has to do somewhat with the way presenters' philosophies are evolving. Presenters are not thinking like that necessarily anymore. But also, we have worked very hard to frame our work as contemporary dance. Contemporary dance with classical roots, but contemporary dance. And so we're not the ethnic dance, we're not the traditional dance. We never use the word traditional, because traditional calls to mind, I'm doing the dances that I learned from my ancestors, which is not at all what we do. So it has somewhat to do with general perceptions changing, but also we feel like we've been a part of making that perception change. You know, the more you come back to, you know, somebody says, oh, you're the traditional dance company, aren't you? And you explain to them why that's not true and why what we do is contemporary. They begin to understand that, and the collective consciousness on it starts to change. And so that's something I've really seen evolving too, is that more and more people see our work as a contemporary expression, not as, you know, a bit of ethnic dance or, what do they say now, culturally specific, non-Western, you know, all of these very not at all descriptive terms that put together like 99% of the dance in the world. So it's our goal. You know, we've taken the word traditional out of our vocabulary. We're trying to take culturally specific out of vocabulary so that people talk about what they're talking about. I'm talking about Bharatanatyam. I'm not talking about ethnic dance or culturally specific dance.
Right. You sort of touched upon this. So being part of Ragmala, what has it meant to you personally?
Well, being part of Ragmala is really like you jump in with both feet, and it's your life.
Did you know that when you went?
You know, you get an idea. Back when I first started dancing with Ronnie, she was still living in Burnsville, and she had a studio in her house, and we used to go down there for classes and rehearsals. And you would drive down there, you would have rehearsal, you would go upstairs, she would feed you, teach you how to eat Indian food with your hands, explain all the different kinds of food. You know, learn how to make tea like an Indian with milk and sugar and like all of these like little things. But the point is, it started early. Like, it's a family endeavor, Ragmala, and anybody who comes in becomes part of the family. And so, yeah, I guess in a certain sense I did know that. but again, as the work has grown, it's become more and more kind of everything that you do relates to it. And that's the kind of person I am. I would never be able to have a job, or not, I would never be able to. If I had to, I would, but I would never enjoy having a job that I just did to make money and having my life be something else. You know, I'm wired to have my career be my life and my life be my career, and that be, and have my professional life be working towards something that I care about personally. So I like it that way. That's not to say, it makes it sound a little bit like a cult, so I don't mean to say that we don't have friends and families and lives outside of what we do, but it's always a part of us in all of those other relationships and situations that we have in our lives. This is very much a part of what we do, and it's a 24/7 thing. It's not just something you do from 9 to 5.
Joan, it sounds like going back to something you said earlier about in the process of learning that the philosophy, the spirituality, the physicalness, it's come to involve all parts of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely, the work forces you to be involved physically, intellectually, emotionally, all at once. And that's something, that's a perception that not a lot of people have of dancers. People think of dancers as bodies in space. And I don't know, I've never danced professionally with another company, but I know that what we do requires that entire dedication of all parts of who you are. You can't stay emotionally removed from the work and do it properly. It requires you to be a channel for emotional expressiveness. Otherwise, it gets back to what we were talking about before, about truth. If it's going to be truthful, you have to open yourself up to it emotionally. Otherwise, it's just pantomime. And intellectually, particularly as somebody coming not from India, but even, you know, born and raised in India doesn't mean you know Indian philosophy. You know, it's not innate. And that's another thing that is interesting when people think that only Indians can do Bharatanatyam. Just because you're ethnically Indian doesn't mean you speak the language, doesn't mean you were raised with the traditions, doesn't mean you have been educated in the philosophy that goes behind this dance form. And so even for the Indian members of the company, which really is just Ashwini, other than Rani and Aparna, Rani's other daughter Ashwini is at this point the only other Indian member of our company. We do have one apprentice who's Indian. She's 15 years old. She's a spectacular dancer, but she's Christian. So for her, learning the Hindu traditions is just as much learning something new as it is for me. And she's living here, so there are things that also have to be explained even to her. So, yeah, it just requires that intellectual and emotional engagement beyond the physical.
Right. Okay. Sort of combine these two things. What do you feel the impact Ragmala has on Minnesota? And then how do you see the future of the company?
The impact that the company has on Minnesota is, I think, twofold. It's the internal and the external. It's the bringing this unique voice and this unique experience to audiences here. Creating a showcase for the highest and deepest form of the classical arts of India for the Indian community in town. You know, that's something we hear all the time, is that people are so proud of us and so proud of Rani and Aparna and what they've done with their own classical art forms here in this country. So it provides that voice and that showcase for that community, particularly for youth who are born and raised here and don't have that experience elsewhere. But then the other side of it is creating, should we be?
It's okay.
Oh, is that okay?
That's okay.
The other side of it is creating a reputation for Minnesota and for this community nationally and internationally. so that, like I said before, when we perform abroad or when we're getting funding from foundations in New York and Washington, it's those people there recognizing this community for what it is.
Do you want me to hold you?
Yeah.
And the future?
Future is to keep going. You know, we very much feel right now that we're on a trajectory. In the last year, we've had some really exciting developments. You know, our fifth commission from the Walker Arts Center, our first grant from the MAP Fund in New York, which is a funder that really values cutting-edge contemporary work. And for them to recognize what we do as cutting-edge contemporary work was a big step for us in terms of what I was saying about reframing the mindset around the kind of work we do. And we got our third grant from the National Dance Project, our, I think it was 18th grant from the NEA. Our work is commissioned by the Walker, commissioned by Lincoln Center, commissioned by the Krannert Center in Illinois and the Clarice Smith Center in Maryland. Performing in Edinburgh for the fourth time. We performed in India three times over the last 4 years. The whole company has. Aparna goes there as a soloist regularly, but as a company, we just started going there recently. And which is another interesting thing, the way we were received in India. Because we went there as an American company doing contemporary work rooted in an Indian classical form, and we had no idea how we could be received. And Ronnie waited for the longest time before even reaching out to presenters in India because she was waiting for her teacher's blessing. So we never performed in India before 2010, and we did a tour through the Surya Festival, which is a very prestigious festival in Kerala. And we did 8 cities in 9 days, and in every place there were people who came up to us after the show and admitted to us that they only came because they were curious about what the American company was going to do, and they were blown away by the work that we did. And we had people saying, students here in Kerala should learn from how much these American women have dedicated themselves to our art forms. You know, really beautiful sentiments. One reviewer said that when the curtain closed on the whole festival, which was 10 different performing groups touring to these cities at the same time, that it was us that stole the hearts of the audience. So we were so gratified by the way Indian audiences really embraced what we're trying to do here with their classical forms. And so back to that, the recognition for the company has been really growing. Ronnie got a U.S. Artists Fellowship. I don't know if she said any of this in her own interview because she's modest about this stuff, so I'm going to say it. She got a U.S. Artists Fellowship, which is huge. She was appointed by President Obama to the National Council on the Arts. Actually, she was nominated. She can't be appointed until she's confirmed by the Senate, and that might not happen for a while with the government shutdown. So for posterity, this is when the government was shut down in 2013. But that kind of trajectory of recognition, and then also the constant growth of the work. You know, the projects that Ronnie and Aparna have brewing for the next couple of years are so exciting and taking the work and their vision in all new directions. So I think what we all see for the future is just continuing on that exciting trajectory.
So is there anything you want to add that we haven't touched upon? Any aspects of the dance, the school, the collaborations?
You know, I could sit here and talk for days. Is there anything I can think of that I didn't say? I don't know. A couple of like little specifics that something that we're working on right now is putting together a parent-teacher organization at the school, which is something we've never officially had. We've always tapped our parents as volunteers and supporters and whatnot, but a couple of the parents are putting together this PTO, and it's so exciting to see like how excited they are about rallying the parents around supporting Ragamala. And it's the little things like that that really kind of keep us going. And, you know, see, I didn't talk much about the school because we were mostly talking about the work and the company, but the school, you know, when there are those kids that really do step up and go do that extra work and do what we call an Arengetram, which is a debut performance as a soloist, as a student soloist, they're, you know, it often happens that kids will do their Arengetram and then go off to college and never dance again, which is, for us, very sad because they've put so much work into it. We've put so much work into it. They, you know, if we let a kid do an Arengetram, it's because they've put just above and beyond energy into and commitment into their study. So, but sometimes it's just not what they want to do. They ultimately want to be a lawyer or want to be a doctor. But there are a few who stay, and they, you know, they want to go to college in town so that they can keep dancing, and they keep studying, and they keep working, and they keep growing, and that's just so much fun to watch, and such fun to watch these, like, young kids, 15, 16 years old, really having that kind of poise and commitment and dedication. So that's a lot of fun. But I don't know, is this going to be edited at all? Because I feel like I ended on, like, the big picture of it, and now we're pulling back to the small picture of all, like, the little things that I forgot to mention. But mostly, I mean, I guess I want to end back on that note of, like, we're just so excited about all of those things coming together, aesthetically and also from, like, the promotional and business side of it, just getting the work out there. The work is growing to exciting places, and then at the same time, probably as a result of that, the recognition and our ability to put the work out there for new audiences is also growing. So, you know, just as Ronnie and Aparna are having these amazing ideas, that's when Lincoln Center is starting to notice, and, you know, not starting to notice, they've been starting to notice for 10 years, but when they're actually acting on that and, you know, bringing us there, it's at this time when we're so excited. Not that we weren't excited about the work we were doing 5 years ago, but it's just each time you look into the future, it just looks more and more exciting in terms of, can I say the word exciting more times? but that's what it is. We're really looking at continuing on that trajectory and seeing where it takes us next.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thank you for doing this. This is a really great thing.
My pleasure.